An anthology about the bad, the short-lived, and the forgotten shows and events in television history. This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Punisher! Control!
Tell me before I change my mind!
I give you Super Train!
Episode 469. Submission number 2072, the creepy live-action pilot to The Adventures of Teddy Ruxpin. The pilot to The Adventures of Teddy Ruxpin aired as two episodes of the ABC weekend specials that aired on November 30th and December 7th, 1985. In the fall of 1986, Ken Forbes's Alchemy 2 and Atkinson Film Arts launched a 65-episode animated series built around the world of one of the biggest toys to ever come from the 1980s, Teddy Ruxpin. It aired for 13 weeks in syndication with repeats after the initial season aired, but The Adventures of Teddy Ruxpin was almost a completely different animal? Earl Kenneth Force was born on September 17, 1936 in Bellwood, Nebraska. His career would lead him to work for the Walt Disney Company and Sid and Marty Krofft. After creating many of the stories for those firms, Ken returned to Disney to work on two new series for the Disney Channel, Welcome to Pooh Corner and Dumbo's Circus. Both series would employ animatronic elements from Force's company Alchemy 2. During the final seasons from 1985 to 1986, Alchemy 2 developed a new toy for the marketplace, an animatronic teddy bear that operated on an affixed tape deck. Worlds of Wonder distributed the toy, Teddy Ruxpin, with Force and Alchemy 2 creating the many characters and stories of his worlds, including his best friends Grubby and Newton Gimmick. To say it was a success would be an understatement. In fact, Secret Galaxy did a great deep dive on that toy. If you want to check it out, we on this podcast are going to concentrate wholly and solely on the pilot. Alchemy 2 moved quickly to capitalize on the phenomenon with a live-action puppet-centric series along the lines of the two Disney series that we previously mentioned. Hired to voice Teddy was the voice of the toy, Phil Barron. Phil Barron, writer, voice actor, went into semi-retirement to become a cantor, but is still working today. He was working with Forcey before on Welcome to Pooh Corner as the voice of Piglet. He has since retired from show business to become a cantor. Before we continue, by the way, because we're talking about Teddy Ruxpin, we need to make one thing crystal clear. Calling back to a couple of pilot months ago, much like the Fluppy Dogs are not dogs, Teddy Ruxpin is not a bear. He is a bear-like hominid creature called an Iliop.
And just like how Chameleon on Doctor Who is not a robot.
You know what he is besides not a bear? He's a phony. A big fat phony. He's a phony bear.
Playing his best friend Grubby, Will Ryan. He was the voice of Grubby as well as the author of several of the Adventure Series titles with the tapes that come with them that you pop into Teddy and Grubby and they talk to each other. 80s tech, it's wonderful. He's also the voice of the main villain of the pilot, Jack W. Tweeg, and one of the deuteragonists of the pilot, the Woolly Whatsit. Rounding out the cast is just a who's who of legendary voice actors. We have Tony Pope as Newton Gimmick, Katie Lee as Princess Aruzia, Russi Taylor, the late Russi Taylor, Minnie Mouse herself, as Leota the Wood Sprite, and BJ Ward, yes, Allura from Voltron, as Ilana Ruxpin, Teddy Ruxpin's mother. They put this pilot together, written from the first two Adventure Series books, The Airship and The Missing Princess. Originally, they wanted to create a live-action series much along the lines of Pooh Corner and Dumbo Circus, and this was the pilot, hopefully, to springboard that into action. We're going to do the whole briefly cut to the chase version of the live watches that we usually do every pilot month. The pilot starts with BJ Ward singing the show's theme song. If you are of a certain age, you grew up listening to Come Dream With Me Tonight. And you can see for yourself, by the way, this is produced by Christopher Bro, who you might remember for his work with Mainframe Entertainment, specifically Reboot and Beast Wars. By the way, there is half of a medallion and a treasure map. That will become important later. The action proper begins 15 years later as Teddy and Grubby are leaving their homeland of Rolonia to discover the Kingdom of Grundo. And of course, with them is the half of the medallion and the treasure map. After being chased along by bounders that are little, incredibly small bounding creatures, they meet Newton Gimmick, a kindly inventor who helps the two on their quest to find the other half of the medallion and where the treasure map is. Now, as you can see, Newton Gimmick is supposed to be a humanoid. And yet, instead of a humanoid, he looks like he has a gigantic mask on. And this is not helping me shake off all this creepy vibe thing.
Mike, what's your review of this mask?
On a scale of 1 to 10, it's a 3. And I'm being generous.
I'm still trying to get over those creatures that were running around that looked like bread. I don't even know what the heck to describe them. They were something even creepier than this.
The bounders?
Yeah, but if you take a look at them, they just look really... You think this is creepy? Those bounders or whatever, they were even creepier.
They have a lot of short actors in the suits. Among them, Arturo Gill from Spaceballs and Bill and Ted's Bogus Journeys and whatnot.
Oh, Station?
Yeah.
Damn.
Speaking of creepy.
Oh my god.
That would be Tweeg, the main villain of this story. His bounder companion is named LB. And together, they're about to swap out the real map that Teddy has with a fake map. So Teddy, Grubby, and Gimmick are going to Grundo proper to find the treasure with the fake map on board Newton Gimmick's new invention. It is called... Are you guys ready for this?
Oh, what's the invention? I'm so curious.
It's called an airship.
What?
It is an airship. Not unlike the kind that you would see on Final Fantasy piloted by Cid, or at least a character named Cid.
So in this universe, nobody's ever heard of like airplanes or whatever.
No.
They hear an airship and they're like, holy this is like the most incredible thing you've ever invented in human history. We're sold. We're going to be on this airship.
We are going to Grundo on an airship, you guys.
Which nobody's ever been on before. Nobody's ever heard of like airplanes. Nobody's ever made any sort of air travel in this universe. This is a first.
The airship itself needed to be refined. The way Gimmick had it is the air bellow was below the ship.
We have the link in the YouTube description, so go to like the 855 mark to see the airship.
Or at least the prototype to the airship, because that thing is not going anywhere.
Oh, wait, he has the idea for the airship.
Gentlemen, this is my latest invention. I call it an airship, and I'm about to try it out for the first time.
Kind of looks like a boat.
Well, as a matter of fact, it did start out to be a boat, but then I realized I'm not very close to water.
No, you're not very close to water.
Yeah, it would be kind of good for a boat to be close to water.
Precisely. That was my exact conclusion. But then the idea hit me. If a boat could float on water, it could also float on air. If the air is hot, that is. With this airship, we can fly as high and as free as a bird.
He's 95% there!
To the hard-to-find city.
That's wonderful. You are more...
I swear to God, he's almost there. He just needs to do one thing.
Mountains to the hard-to-find city.
That's wonderful. You are more than welcome to share the treasure, if we're lucky enough to find it, that is.
Yeah, there should be plenty of treasure.
All right, let's get underway. If you fellas can begin loading this firewood, I'll go inside and pack some provisions.
All right.
Horrid little bounders.
Oh no. Now I know how Tweak got his hands on the map.
Ow.
Gimmick used it to shut LB up.
Oh, why'd they do that?
Because he's an absent-minded professor. And not the good kinds like Jerry Lewis, Eddie Murphy, or in a rare turn, Harry Anderson.
How do you not mention Fred McMurray? I will not stand for that. The OG absent-minded professor. By the way, do you know who the villain was in the absent-minded professor?
Who was?
He didn't win.
Didn't he go on to become a train engineer?
Yes. For all we know, Keenan Wynn might have invented this airship.
Which would explain why it doesn't go anywhere right now.
Oh, wait, hold on a second. They're going to figure out where the map was.
All the supplies?
Yes.
Where's the map?
Let me see. Now, where did I put that map?
I don't see it here anywhere.
I'll go and check in the house.
Yeah, the house, of course. Yeah, that's where you left it. The house. Oh, they're getting off the ground.
Except, like I said, you're so close. You're like... Whoa. 95% there.
Oh, no. They failed. And now the airship's upside down. But no, they got it up now. Oh, good.
It's a good thing they figured out during the commercial break that the air balloon is supposed to go on top instead of below. So, they're following the fake map. They're traveling south instead of north, where they end up crashing into a tree. And where they meet Leota, a wood sprite, who is obviously an actress on a green screen. And instead of a full-body puppet, this is an actual actress who is miming the words of Russie Taylor.
Yeah, you can tell that she's like hanging from some wires, sort of like some Mary Merton, Peter Pan stuff. Not necessarily good, but I get what they're trying to do. And also, again... mid-80s technology.
Yeah, this is UWF video technology at work here.
Oh, Herb Abrams UWF green screen technology. Which, by the way, you can watch episodes of Herb Abrams UWF on the Ultimate Classic Wrestling channel on Plex.
As Greg discovered before the show. And we were watching the weirdest steel cage match ever. And we all missed the ending.
Somehow we all missed the ending to it. Yeah, they went to like a commercial, and was there a conclusion to that? No, I didn't see it. Did you? No.
No.
I think it was a
Yeah.
schmoz. I think everyone just ran in the end, which defeats the whole purpose of a cage match, but whatever.
I have a theory about that. They have the tapes secondhand off of somebody recording off of the pay-per-view, and they just ran out of tape. Everything else in the UWF sort of collection on Plex just seems cut rate. So, yeah, that is equally plausible.
Okay, they fixed the airship.
All right. They say goodbye to Leota. Bye, Leota. And now they're continuing to follow the map, which is a fake. We talked about the map, but we didn't talk about the half pendant. Teddy's half of the pendant says spirit, treasure, edge. What does it mean? I don't know.
Oh no, they're running out of fuel. They gotta send the ship down.
They're out of fuel, they're out of ideas, and right now they're in the middle of the desert. And in the middle of the desert, they encounter a race known as the Mud Blups. And true to their name, they're mostly mud. And they're imprisoned in their cave. And in that cave, they meet Prince Aaron, who is, by the way, not a human. He looks like a human, but he is from a race called Illipers. Grubby's race name is the only one that makes any sense. Grubby is called an octopede. Teddy, Grubby, and Gimmick are imprisoned by the Mud Blups. And this is where the first part ended on its original airing on ABC. Here they meet Prince Aaron, an Illiper prince, who explains that he's in search of his little sister, Princess Aruzia, who has been kidnapped. By who? We don't know. Well, what we do know is they have to figure out a way to escape their cage. Just so happens that there was an earthquake.
I have an observation about Prince Aaron. Look at the face. And actually, who is that other person? We're skipping through it a little bit, but there's somebody who looks a little bit like Prince Aaron. But looking at Prince Aaron, the face, you know what that face reminds me of? I'm surprised you guys didn't chime in quicker with this. Baby Sinclair.
I totally see it now.
Thank you.
Do we have like a minion of some sort? Because he also looks like Baby Sinclair.
That's what I was saying. The person, that guy looks like Baby Sinclair a little bit too, but I'm seeing it more in the prince.
Well, that's because the prince has pink skin and really big violet eyes. By the way, the prisoner treatment is a little less than pleasant. It's a real hellhole.
And they're not eating. You can see them put the spoon up to their mouth and just drop the food. They're not really eating. But there's like dirt falling on their food. No wonder they're not eating it.
Yeah.
Oh no, what's happening here in this cave?
I don't know. But if this was on TV, there would be a to be continued thing. But there isn't. All we know is there was an earthquake, a cave in, and now somehow Teddy, Gimmick, and Prince Aaron have escaped. Now all we have to do is figure out how to rescue Grubby. Gimmick remembers that while they were in the caves, a grunge with a camera, that's who we were talking about, then there he is right there, had taken a picture of them. The flash created confusion among the Mud Blups. So, the three return with bright, distracting lanterns to rescue Grubby. Turns out, Grubby's the only one of the three who knows how to cook.
Oh.
Which is kind of ironic when you consider that at the beginning of this whole adventure, he expected Teddy to survive on Roasted Root. So they rescued Grubby, and they're back in the air. The trio agrees to help Prince Aaron find his sister, reasoning that the sister, Princess Aruzia, is worth more than any treasure. And then we have Tweeg and LB doing what they do best, yelling and taking it.
Okay, you know what LB reminds me of?
Mo of the Three Stooges?
No.
I gotta say, Chico's not far off with that hair, but I want to hear what Greg's gonna say, because it's reminding me of something, too. I just can't put my finger on it.
Okay, the design looks like a cross. It's like an if-they-needed version of Casey Munchkin and Quirk.
That is Quirk the Chilled Tomato, right?
Yeah. We talked about in the Video Power episode.
That was back in episode 75, by the way.
I really didn't think we'd get another Quirk the Chilled Tomato reference. Oh, my.
Did you expect a Casey Munchkin reference, Mike?
What if I said yes? Like I said, it looks somewhat familiar to me. I was thinking a video game character. I didn't totally eliminate Casey Munchkin. But again, there's another character that, and not Quirk the Tomato, there's another character it just reminds me of. I can't put my finger on it.
So now that Tweeg has his hands on the real map, he and LB are, I'm guessing, on their way through the proper channels to whatever treasure these jokers are looking for. By the way, these jokers are running out of water, so they have to stop at a waterfall where they meet the Woolly Whatsit. Teddy's asking, where do you think we can get some water? The Woolly Whatsit is standing on the water. Also, they tell him about Princess Aruzia, and the Woolly Whatsit tells them that there's a wizard that will help him find Aaron's sister.
Okay, I do have a comparison for this Woolly Whatsit thing. If you guys have seen the previews for the movie If, that's the magenta cousin of that one big purple creature. I don't know names and whatnot. I've seen the promo a couple of times. But that looks like the magenta cousin of that purple thing.
I'm getting sort of Sully from Monsters, Inc.
By the way, as we're recording this, season 2 of Monsters at Work is premiering on Monday on Disney Plus.
I'm also, for some reason, getting some magenta Grimace vibes.
Furry Grimace.
Well, magenta or pink Grimace.
I got a question. What was Grimace's deal?
I don't know.
No, I can't say what I want to say because this is a family podcast.
I know what you want me to say, but I'm not going to say it.
It's a trap.
It's a trap.
He was Ronald McDonald's big purple-ass friend who, I guess, liked milkshakes.
Yes. Let's go with that.
With no other commentary added, I think that's the perfect answer. Make your own conclusion about his intelligence level, functionality, stuff like that. But we're not going to say anything derogatory about Grimace. Just, he likes his milkshakes.
Hey, guys, remember when I did a promo read for the Grimace birthday milkshake? Yeah, we do, Johnny. We remember it.
Oh, great. Now this is a Greg episode. I do want to hear Johnny do more promos, though.
Okay, so the Woolly Whatsit leads our motley crew to this gigantic castle where they meet a wizard. And the wizard kind of sort of looks like Kenny Rogers for some reason.
You know what I was going to say the wizard looks like? Victor French.
Yes!
I totally get that more than Kenny Rogers. But he's not wearing an Oakland A's cap.
No, he's wearing a Washington Wizards cap.
Oh, which is something because the Wizards don't exist for like another 11 to 12 years. They're still the Bullets.
The wizard opens the door. The first face he sees is the Woolly Whatsit, who is like twice his size. So come on. Why do you want to do something like that? So they ask the wizard about Princess Aruzia. We have the grunge from earlier, who actually is looking through a lens for any footage of Princess Aruzia. The wizard calls it magic, but it's actually just film footage. So congratulations. Not only is this Pooh Corner Dumbo Circus wannabe, this is a found footage movie. And these jokers don't even know the secret.
What's the secret?
The secret is the grunge on the other side of the thing. And also the sort of Wheel of Fortune in the middle. Well, it's part Wheel of Fortune, part
Ouija board? Yeah, I would say Ouija board, yeah.
So they look at the footage. They don't know it's footage. They think it's magic. And they learn that Princess Aruzia was kidnapped by the Gutangs and kept in the hard-to-find city.
You know, that doesn't look like a Ouija board crossed with Wheel of Fortune. Looks like they're, like, standing over a roulette wheel.
And this is all the grunge's footage. There's no magic to this.
No, this is all on film. You know what? I can't wait for the 4K remaster of the grunge's footage of this.
Grubby then realizes that this was the same place that they were looking for to find the treasure. And of course, the wizard is not going to, you know, send everybody off for free. He wants to get paid. And here's Tweeg again. Looking for the hard to find. Everybody's looking for the hard to find city. And Tweeg finds the airship. And he has LB follow the airship. And now they're camping the night away while Tweeg is hitching a ride on the rudder of the airship.
There he is right there on the airship.
And they finally arrive at the hard-to-find city. I don't know what they're looking for, but they're going to have a hard time finding it, A, in the dark, and B, with a whole lot of guards guarding the hard-to-find city. By the way, those guards, they're the Gutangs. They overcome the Gutangs, steal their armor and masks, and use it to continue unabashed through the hard-to-find city.
Okay, you can so obviously tell they're in disguise by looking at their feet. And then look!
Octopede, 8 feet. And here we see Princess Aruzia locked up like some common gutter wench.
Never thought I'd hear the phrase gutter wench talking about a kid's program.
Prince Aaron finds Princess Aruzia, frees her, and then there's this great reunion. It's a tender moment, but they need to escape the hard to find city, so they get their disguises back on, making their way through the city. And Teddy finds an Iliop vault. There he discovers the second half of the medallion, seals it, and turns out it's their treasure. And by the way, in whole, the medallion reads, "Only the pure of spirit may find the treasure of knowledge." And out of nowhere, gold, pearls, crystals?
But look at Teddy's face like there. He sees the treasure and he's like, holy effing shit. We're going to be so rich.
Teddy Ruxpin's going to get all the hookers and blow.
They take the crystals, the six crystals that raise out from the vault, and they leave the treasure behind. Because, again, Princess Aruzia, more important than the treasure. And in a way, the crystals, also more important than the treasure. Meanwhile, we have Tweeg reveling in his newfound wealth now that he's found the treasure. And he spends his time plotting on how to get it all down from the mountain. As soon as morning arrives, Our motley crew escapes in the airship while the Gootangs are taking off in aeroplanes.
Which are clearly toy airplane models.
Can I offer an alternate name for the Gootangs?
Yes.
Why don't we just call them the Gootang Clan?
Boo this man!
Boo this man!
Boo!
Is my point not valid, though?
I didn't say it wasn't valid. I said it was horrible. Everybody's being attacked. They're trying to take the airship down. Teddy's throwing everything they have at him, and by everything, I mean one single solitary slingshot and some stew.
Grubby helped. He put the stew in there.
This is basically Sid and Marty Krofft meets Star Wars. And here to help from the ground, it's the Wooly Wotsit! He is not here for your nonsense! But our group comes back for the Wooly Wotsit, who is apparently knocked out from having fought all of those Gootangs. He thinks he's seeing an imaginary princess there. No, that's a real princess, dude. Princess Aruzia, being just a sweet dear, thanks the Wooly Wotsit with a hug and a kiss. Aw. They have the medallion. They each have a crystal. It's more important than the treasure that they left behind for Tweeg to get. But what about the treasure that Tweeg did get?
Huh.
We're about to play What Happens to It.
Come on, LB. Give me a hand.
I still can't figure out why those guys left all this treasure here. How could those things they were carrying be more important than this treasure?
What? Where did it go? Oh, no! Oh, no!
Let me, lovely princess, and stand before a king. Let's dream a great adventure and let us live that magic dream. And if our dreams are good,
I love that the Wotsit is like waving, like, bye.
Look, there's my home. There's my home.
Then the oh, good. There's Rome.
We dream tonight. Someday. Just might come true.
So that's the pilot. I'm guessing after they drop Prince Aaron and Princess Aruzia off at their castle, they're going to find whatever else adventure is out there. Again, this is the adventures of Teddy Ruxpin. But this only aired once on the ABC weekend specials, obviously. After the special aired, Alchemy 2 opted to go the animation route, outsourcing work overseas and producing the series out of Canada, as those moves proved to have the greater return on investment.
Okay, guys, I found two notable names who were doing the suit performing in this pilot on IMDb. One is Tony Cox, who you probably remember from Bad Santa. But, Mike, you're going to love the other one. Mike, do you want to guess who the other little person was that was in this pilot as a suit performer?
Don't say who I think you're going to say. Get it out of your system, but if it's who I think it is, I may just die laughing.
Joe Geeb.
I knew it! 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 And Greg, just remember, it was a thing on TV Hall of Famer Joe Geeb.
That's right.
And if you didn't listen to the Hall of Fame induction, Joe Geeb is primarily known for two things around these parts. Well, now three. But first, He was the short person on that one episode of Super Train with Billy Barty where they went into that presidential cabin. But also, two, he was the leader of the short people on Man vs. Beast when the 100 short people competed against an elephant.
There's Hold one on. More!
What's the other one?
Joe Griffo from The Mandalorian, A Thousand Ways to Die, and the final episode of That's My Bush, where he played one of the little wrestlers.
Oh my god! He was one of the little wrestlers. He might have faced the mysterious loser. Loser! Loser!
Loser! Loser! Loser.
But, hold on.
Wait, was this an episode where I was hospitalized?
Yes, it was.
Oh, no wonder I don't get it, okay.
Oh, and he was also in an episode of the Super Mario Brothers Super Show as Mini Mario, so he is three credits toward Hall of Fame status.
He's already in the Hall of Fame, silly.
No, he's talking about the other short person.
Okay.
Joe Griffo, three credits toward Hall of Fame status.
Now, there's one thing I have to mention about Joe Gibb in that Super Train episode. Now, we mentioned Billy Barty was the other short person. But I don't think we talked about who the magician was that was with them in that episode. The magician in that episode was Victor Bruno.
Oh, yeah. I mentioned when we did the Hall of Fame induction, when I talked about that episode, I said there were, I believe, five. It was a thing on TV Hall of Famers on that episode, including Victor Bruno. Yeah.
So just think when we did that episode, we just thought, oh, it's hilarious. Billy Barty, another short person, and a magician. Now we know all three. And pretty much all three are in the Hall of Fame.
Two are, one is on the fast track, let's say.
No, all of them are. Victor Bruno was in this year.
No, but the third one, Grippo, he's not in the Hall.
Oh, yeah, from this episode. Yeah, not yet.
No, I thought you said he was on the Super Train episode.
No. I was talking about Victor Bruno.
Oh, never mind then. Okay.
This two-episode special was so difficult and expensive to make, they opted to go animation instead, getting 65 episodes from Atkinson Film Arts, produced out of Canada, which proved to be the greater return on investment. Everyone except Bill Barron and Will Ryan were replaced. Because if you replace Teddy Ruxpin, you have no show. As for the pilot itself, it re-aired as part of the syndication package in 1987 and was ultimately released on home video, which we watched on YouTube thanks to YouTube user Betamax King. The video itself commands a hefty price on the secondary market, or, like us, you could watch it for free on YouTube. But this would not be the end of bringing Teddy Ruxpin to life on the small screen. Jim Henson Productions actually did a proof of concept CG short, trying to sell that to someplace. It never got anywhere. One live-action pilot led to 65 animation episodes. The animation episodes were stuff we grew up watching, well, if you're a child of the 80s. But the creepy live-action pilot of The Adventures of Teddy Ruxpin was just a thing on TV. Well, this is just the beginning of an interesting pilot month, I'd like to say. But in the meantime, if you want to catch all of the things that did make it on to television, you can go to itwasathingontv.com, where you can listen to the 468 episodes that preceded this one, all sorts of great bonuses, including minisodes, live shows, extended versions of previous episodes, the whole works. Remember, we're on all social media, including Instagram, Threads, Mastodon, at It Was a Thing on TV, except for Facebook, where we are at It Was a Thing on TV podcast. And if you're looking for us on Mastodon, remember, we are at It Was a Thing on TV at tvwatch.party. Subscribe to the podcast wherever fine podcasts can be streamed: Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Audible, our indie streamers. We love our indie streamers. And don't forget, we are also on YouTube. You can like, subscribe, hit that notification bell so you can stay informed on all future uploads, including the pilot we have for Thursday's show. And if you thought that, I should probably preface this by saying, the show we wanted to do on Thursday, that's not happening. That may happen in the future, but it's not happening on Thursday. What is happening on Thursday, and if you thought The Adventures of Teddy Ruxpin was creepy, y'all ain't seen nothing yet.
Mike, on a scale of 1 to 10, how creepy is this pilot?
Dang, when you compare the pilot coming up on Thursday to what we just saw, it's almost even, to be honest. There is a certain creep factor because people who did this show wanted to use technology, and I think it's ambitious, but at the same time, the end result is horrifying.
I will, however, say the show that we're about to watch, it's a little before its time. Not just in terms of what's on it, but also how it was produced. But we'll get to that on our next installment of It Was a Thing on TV. For Greg, for Mike, I'm Chico. Thank you ever so much for listening. Please be kind to one another, and we will see you for the next one.
Wow.
Maybe I should regale you guys for the end with the time that my dad and I, we commandeered my sister's Teddy Ruxpin and started playing rock music in it.
What did you do?
Like I said, dad and I commandeered my dear sister's Teddy Ruxpin, probably 86, 87, and we took out the cartridges, the storytelling cartridges, and put in Bruce Springsteen. And just seeing Teddy Ruxpin trying to jam along with Bruce Springsteen is pretty awesome.
Cool.
It was one of those things that at the time sounded pretty interesting. Something stupid. How old would I have been back then? 10, 11 year old. And his early 30s father thought we'd have a lot of humor out of it, but wasn't as good as planned. Teddy Ruxpin trying to sing actual like music is kind of weird.
With guys like us, maybe we were born to run.
No, you're almost there, but the thing is, Teddy Ruxpin got like every fourth lyric. I think he was in tune, in sync with the actual voice of Teddy Ruxpin, or maybe there were some sort of signals on the tape that caused him to move his mouth at certain times. But yeah, don't try playing rock music in your Teddy Ruxpin.